Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, March 12, 2020. We'll start with the stories titled Election Officials Use Caution with Virus. This is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville, I'm going to say. With next week's election quickly approaching, local election officials are reporting few changes so far in the wake of the coronavirus worries, according to Vermilion County Chief Deputy County Clerk Supervisor of Elections Lindsay Light. So far, we don't have any polling place changes to report, and hopefully we won't have any. She said they canceled a couple of nursing home election visits and have sent ballots by mail instead, just as a preventative measure, but so far everything else is going as planned. Also, according to Light, as far as extra measures in regards to flu and or coronavirus, we supplied every precinct with antibacterial wipes to be able to wipe hands, wipe booths, and wipe pens as often as possible. Every polling place has a bathroom where voters and or the judges can go and wash their hands. Early voting numbers in the county so far are tracking right along with where they were 4 years ago. As of Wednesday morning, 432 voters outside of the city of Danville in Vermilion County have voted in person. County officials mailed 387 ballots and have had 235 returned. If anyone still wants to vote by mail, Light can mail ballots out through today if they used the county's online link at www.vercounty.org. to apply for a vote-by-mail ballot. Ballots that still need to be returned need to be postmarked on or before Election Day to be counted. According to Danville Election Commission Executive Director Sandy Delhay, early voting for the March 2016 election showed there were 276 early voters. So far for the March 17, 2020 election, they've had 390 people who have come in to vote early. As far as the coronavirus goes, Delhay says we will have hand sanitizer and containers of Clorox wipes at each polling place. They will encourage those who have concerns there are restrooms at the polling place, and voters could use soap and hot water to wash their hands before and after voting. Delhay also reported on Wednesday that they had a nursing home call their office to let them know that if it is mandated that they will not allow visitors until further notice due to the coronavirus. So they also are handling those residents with vote-by-mail ballots. Okay, the next story, excuse me, is titled Get Crackin'. Kindergartners Learn Excellent Lessons. This is written by Carol Roam in Danville, and there is a picture of Edison Elementary School kindergarten teacher Amber Tutwiler on the right scoops up a chick to hand to Zenobia Simmons on the left and Hala Brandy. The chicks are part of an annual Ag in the Classroom program sponsored by Vermilion County Farm Bureau. At once chicks started hatching this week in Amber Tutwiler's kindergarten classroom, there was no stopping the hatchathon. By late Wednesday morning, eight chicks had emerged from two dozen eggs being incubated in the classroom at Edison Elementary School. Tutwiler had been keeping a close eye on the eggs, and so has the school's custodian. By the time I left here yesterday on Tuesday, we had two chicks hatched and then another two hatched overnight, she said, adding that the custodian moved the chicks that hatched overnight from the incubator to a crate with food, water, and a warming lamp. This morning when the kids arrived, they got to see another three chicks hatch, she said. The Vermilion County Farm Bureau's Ag in the Classroom program provides chicken eggs as well as the incubators to hatch them and other supplies to area classrooms to assist the teachers with their science, math, and agriculture skills. The program, which has been in existence for about 20 years, has several incubators it loans out to the classrooms around Vermilion County a couple of times a year. A few weeks ago, incubators and eggs were provided to six kindergarten classrooms: Salt Fork North Elementary in Catlin, Maple Grade School in Hoopston, Salt Fork South Elementary in Sidell, as well as Edison Elementary and two kindergarten classrooms at Mark Denman Elementary, all in Danville. first grade classrooms at Bismarck Henning Elementary and at Pinecrest in Georgetown also received incubators and eggs. A second round of incubators and eggs will be distributed to different area classrooms next month, with hatching scheduled around April 29th. Tutwiler has hatched chicks several times in her kindergarten classroom throughout the years. While waiting the 3 weeks for the eggs to hatch, the youngsters work on various educational activities provided by the Farm Bureau, such as counting down the days until the eggs hatch and charting the temperature inside the incubator. We've learned about the life cycle of a chicken from the cracking egg to the adulthood, and they've been looking at chick books, Tutwiler says. Today is day 22, and the first chick hatched yesterday on Tuesday when Thea was here, Tutwiler said, referring to Thea Gernand, who now runs the Vermilion County Farm Bureau's Ag in the Classroom program and took time to read a book to the class. The children also made a chick art project, and we've been learning a lot of vocabulary, Tutwiler said. On Wednesday, Tutwiler carefully scooped up a few of the 8 chicks that were strong enough to live outside the incubator so the youngsters could hold them. Another group of youngsters gathered around the incubator, keeping a close eye on the remaining eggs that were in the verge of hatching. Of course, after the students returned to their seats, Tutwiler noticed an 8th chick had hatched while nobody was watching. The chicks will reside in Tutwiler's classroom for another week until the district goes on spring break. The Farm Bureau will come to take the chicks to a farm, she said. A few of Tutwiler's students, however, wish the chicks could go home with them. They're adorable, kindergartner Hala Brandy said. Sometimes they peep a lot, and they're annoying. Another kindergartner, Violet Jones, said, they're cute and fuzzy, and I love them so much. Classmate Emmy Shanks added, I want to cuddle with them and take them home. Okay, I'll run through the obituaries. Thelma Loretha Rose passed away on March 8, 2020 at her home. A homecoming celebration will commence at noon on Saturday, March 14th at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. Saturday until the time of the service. Interment will follow at Spring Hill Cemetery. A public viewing will be from 1 to 5 p.m. Friday, March 13th at Lincoln Sons Funeral Home. Inga Brands Kellner, 83 of Tilton, passed away Tuesday, March 3rd in the comfort of her home. A celebration of life for Inge is scheduled for 1 p.m. Saturday, March 14th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with Father Loftus officiating. Rosanna Goodwin, 92 of Westville, died Friday, March 6th at Mill Pond Health Campus in Greencastle, Indiana. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel at 414 South State Street in Westville. Pastor John Mincy will officiate. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 to 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. And Alicia A. Woodfork, 36 of Danville, died at 5:18 p.m. Tuesday, March 10th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Lincoln Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. Well, it looks like it's a kind of a slow local news day, which I guess is good. Nothing bad being told about. So anyway, I'll do something about the coronavirus. Coronavirus could cancel weddings. This is written by Kristen A. Johnson from the Chicago Tribune. For most engaged couples, rain and no-shows are usually among the biggest concerns for a wedding day. But this year, the coronavirus is making soon-to-be newlyweds take caution like never before. Megan McMahon and her fiancé, Mike Hines, are planning a honeymoon to Greece after their April 18th wedding in Goose Island. They have every intention of going on their trip, McMahon says, unless the coronavirus escalates. We're being reasonably cautious, McMahon said. Our concerns aren't if we'll get sick, but might we go there and they shut down transit or the museums in Athens, or will we be able to get back into the country afterwards? While the couple does have travel insurance, the decision to not go because of fear is not covered, explained McMahon. They're just hoping it all goes as planned. We're trying to look at the positives, like maybe our international flight will be less crowded, joked McCann. We're being as responsible as we can, packing hand sanitizer, bringing wipes, and trying to avoid anyone who appears to be sick. We're hoping the islands are a little more insulated than the mainland of Greece. Lori Stevenson, owner and principal of LOLA Event Productions in Chicago, says her team hasn't had any couples cancel or postpone weddings, and they're still getting bookings for next year. People are more likely to take a chance on attending an emotional event rather than taking a chance on a business conference, said Stevenson. If a couple is getting married this year, Stevenson and her team are offering new advice. Couples should acknowledge the potential concerns on their wedding website and articulate what they're going to do as hosts to make sure everyone is safe and happy, said Stevenson. Make that family-style meal at the reception into a plated meal so guests aren't passing things between each other, suggested Stevenson, who said having extras like hand sanitizer stations will help guests feel and see that it's being addressed and they're not worried about contamination. McCann bought 175 individual hand sanitizers as her wedding favor, she said. We're thinking of all the ways to protect ourselves and our guests, said McCann, who might also put signs in the bathroom that have song lyrics to sing while guests wash their hands. Stevenson also told couples to make sure they're aware of the vendor's emergency protocols. We can't change our lives, but this is one of those places where you need a backup, said Stevenson. As a team, we have a backup person assigned to every single event if someone is traveling. Jordan Kagan is planning to get married March 22nd, and while he and his fiancée, Debbie Steinberg, aren't worried about their own health, they are concerned for their older family members traveling for the event. We're not necessarily changing our plans, but we are definitely having family members that are older, said Kagan, noting that he and Steinberg have relatives who have been recently hospitalized and others compromised immune systems. The couple have guests traveling to Chicago from both coasts, Kagan said, but none have canceled because of the coronavirus. Live streaming the wedding ceremony and parts of the reception can be helpful for guests in the high-risk category, Stevenson said. Getting creative about how to include people from as far away is worth time and energy, she said. Steinberg is an educator and can't miss school, so she and Kagan won't be taking a honeymoon immediately. In July, they plan to go to Atlanta for a conference and hope to use that as a little bit of a honeymoon, said Kagan, if it still happens. There are some concerns if that convention is going to happen, said Kagan, who's trying to keep everything in proper perspective and not get freaked out. McCann said she hasn't heard anything from the vendors that would keep her from moving forward. We're keeping our eye on Greece, she said. Next, automatic voter registration problems continue, and this is written by Sophia Turin from the Associated Press in Chicago. Republicans renewed calls Wednesday to suspend Illinois' automatic voter registration program as state officials disclosed continued problems affecting more than 1,000 people who applied for real IDs. The registrants should have been automatically registered, but were wrongly categorized as having opted out. The issue first came up at a state board of elections meeting in January with a single voter, but has since affected 1,151 people who applied for the IDs at Secretary of State's offices, according to a Monday notice sent to a local election authorities. Secretary of State Jesse White's office said the extent of the problem was discovered when reviewing records and attributed it to conflicting information on applications. The office notified election officials on Friday. The affected individuals have been registered and can vote in Tuesday's primary, according to election officials. Signed in 2017 with bipartisan support, the program faced numerous problems, including delays in wrongly registering hundreds of people who said they weren't U.S. citizens. At least one non-citizen voted, which violates state and federal laws. The law also faces a lawsuit. Automatic voter registration is a complete mess, said State Representative Tim Butler, a Springfield Republican. We've been assured for over 2 months that the problems have been fixed, yet problems continue to come up. He's filed legislation for an independent audit. Democrats who run the state have said there are no plans to pause the program. Obviously, we'll be monitoring it very close, White spokesman Dave Drucker told the Chicago Tribune. We did catch it, which is good. Next, election bill stalls in Illinois House. Proposal would merge county city commissions, and this is written by Jennifer Bailey in Springfield. A bill State Representative Mike Moran, Republican from Fithian, filed last month to bring the question to voters on whether to merge the Danville Election Commission into the Vermilion County Clerk's Office is stalled. It's not pulled, but it's not going to move either, Moran said Wednesday. Moran said the Illinois House is close to the deadline of getting bills out of committee, and he has limited time. I have other priorities I'm focusing on, he said. He also added there are questions out there in the community, and I want to make sure we have those conversations with people and make sure people are at ease with the changes we are proposing. Moran said he's not giving up the idea, but said nothing likely would happen until next year's legislative session. He added the question can be put on a ballot for voters to decide now. Somebody could circulate a petition to get 1,000 voter signatures to place the question on the ballot. Ron said his bill would make the process a little easier. I have a colleague proposing a bill along the same lines, he said, too. While I'm not going to move mine, she could move hers. State Representative Noreen Hammond, Republican from Macomb, is proposing the combining of election commissions in any county statewide under 100,000 people. House Bill 4819 could move forward this year. There are six counties in Illinois that have separate election offices. Questions have arisen locally about the consolidation affecting voter access, precinct structure, and having someone held accountable for the election process. All this is about making local government more efficient, Moran said. There are two county departments doing the exact same job, he said. This is about saving taxpayer money, he said, saying taxes are a real concern and can be a hindrance to economic development. He too said the Election Commission executive director is an employee, just as the person in the county clerk's office is an employee who can be fired if there is a problem. The county clerk is ultimately held responsible by voters, he added. Moran filed House Bill 5309 on behalf of a bipartisan panel from the Vermilion County Board. This would simply be a way for the election process to run smoother as one holistic entity, Moran said. The legislation, if it is passed, would simply allow the county board to put the measure on the ballot for the voters to decide. The final decision on whether or not to do this would be up to the voters. Vermilion County Board Chairman Larry Bond has estimated a savings of about half of the Danville Election Commission's annual budget, which is $319,000 this presidential election year and was $226,000 last year with the consolidation. Bond said there would be some increased costs in the clerk's office with the consolidation due to equipment, supplies, and other items. The Danville Election Commission is funded by Vermilion County, with Danville and Vermilion County's election processes separate. Okay, next is Census 2020 count begins on Thursday. This is written by Peter Hancock at the Capital News in Illinois in Springfield. people throughout the United States can begin filling out their census forms online starting Thursday, and state officials in Illinois are pulling out all the stops to make sure the state gets an accurate headcount. Between March 12th and March 20th, about 95% of all households in the country will receive a postcard in the mail inviting them to fill out their census from online or by phone in their language. The census is only nine questions that impact every single person in your hometown, our state, and across the country, Grace Hu, Secretary of Illinois Department of Human Services, said during a news conference on Wednesday. These nine questions are important for your family, your neighbor, your city, your county, and your state, because your response determines Illinois' infrastructure, meaning roads, hospitals, schools, grocery stores, and fire stations. The U.S. Constitution requires that a census be taken every 10 years in order to apportion seat in Congress. Responding to the census is mandatory for all people living in the United States, regardless of their citizenship, although the questionnaire does not ask about citizenship. The census form asks the name of each person living in the household as of April 1st, their dates of birth, ages, race, and ethnicity, their relationships to each other, and whether the home is occupied by the owners or renters. In addition to allocating congressional seats, the federal government also uses the data as the basis for distributing hundreds of billions of dollars each year to states and local communities for things like education, healthcare, housing, highways, and other infrastructure. State governments also use census data to redraw congressional and state legislative district lines. Recent census estimates have shown Illinois has been losing population and is at risk of losing at least one of its 18 congressional seats. Because of that, the Illinois General Assembly last year put $29 million in the state budget for IDHS to help ensure an accurate count. House said $20 million of that has already been distributed in each of the state's 102 counties to work with local organizations to maximize the census count. House said IDHS was tasked with implementing the census in Illinois because, as the state's main social service agency, it deals directly with hard-to-count populations, including the homeless. Marishanta Wilkerson, one of the agency's two census co-directors, said the YWCA has been designated to reach out to the homeless population in the Chicago area. Elsewhere in the state, she said, the agency is working with regional intermediaries to work with homeless shelters and other organizations to host census nights and provide internet access to those people so those people can participate. In previous years, people received a census form in the mail to be filled out, but this is the first year the U.S. Census Bureau has offered an online option. People will first receive a postcard in the mail inviting them to complete the form on the website my2020census.gov. That postcard will contain a 12-digit code that is used to verify a person's address, but those who don't receive a postcard or who want to fill it out early may select an option to enter the address manually or indicate that they do not have an address. About a week later, people will receive a follow-up letter reminding them to complete the forms. Okay, now we'll do a sports story. Fans barred from Big Ten tournament. This is written by Todd Aaron Golden at the CNHI Sports in Indiana. The Big Ten Conference has announced that fans will not be able to attend the Big Ten men's basketball tournament at Bankers Life Fieldhouse starting with today's session in the wake of concerns about the COVID-19 coronavirus. The Big Ten released the following statement on Wednesday evening. The Big Ten Conference announced this evening that beginning Thursday, March 12, 2020, attendance at all Big Ten men's basketball tournament games will be limited to student athletes, coaches, event staff, essential team, and conference staff, TV network partners, credentiated media, and immediate family members of the participating teams. Additionally, all further Big Ten conference winter and spring sport competitions, including championship tournament events, will also be limited to student athletes, coaches, event staff, essential team and conference staff, TV network partners, credentialed media, and immediate family members of the participating teams. The main priority of the Big Ten Conference is to ensure the safety of our student athletes, coaches, administrators, fans, and media as we continue to monitor all relevant information on the COVID-19 virus on a daily basis. The Big Ten released this statement at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, changing their policy on allowing fans in the facility. The first game of the tournament, Minnesota versus Northwestern, had already started with fans already inside Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The Indiana-Nebraska game will also be played before fans later Wednesday night. The Big Ten will have 4 days of tournament play without fans in attendance. Iowa Athletic Director Gary Barta released the following statement. The decisions that are being made to limit attendance at Big Ten conference events and NCAA championship events are the results of information provided by the national health experts. The Big Ten conference and its league presidents are in full support of these decisions, Barta said. There are a lot of unknowns at this time in regards to tickets, travel, and the effect these decisions will have on a large number of fans. We will be communicating information to those impacted by these decisions as we received additional details, Barta continued. The health and wellness of our coaches, staff, and student athletes, as well as our fans, is paramount and will be the core of all decisions moving forward, he concluded. That wellness was thrown into question for one of the participants late Wednesday. Nebraska coach Fred Hoiberg fell ill and left the game in the second half. Afterwards, he was taken to the hospital for tests. Indiana defeated Nebraska 89-64 in the second of the two contests on Wednesday. Afterwards, Indiana coach Archie Miller commented on the situation. I told our team what happened and we'll brace ourselves for what happens next. I think it's an evolving situation and it's rapid, but it puts it into reality of the seriousness of it. When world experts start to recommend things, you obviously better listen, Miller said. Indiana is scheduled to play Penn State tonight at 8:30 Eastern Time. Obviously, you cross your fingers that the college basketball landscape can continue on, even if it means there aren't fans. You grind it out and get to this point of the season. It's the most special time of our young guys, Miller said. It's most special time for, obviously, the fans, and to get here with this happening, obviously, is a little bit unfortunate, Miller continued. So I think we're all crossing our fingers and hoping for the best, which is allowing us to continue to play. But like I said, when experts speak up, you better listen. And I think the NBA just probably put the sporting world on hold, Miller added. Okay, run through a couple community briefs real quick. In Danville, church serves a meal. Greater Shiloh Baptist Church at 609 North Bowman Avenue will serve catfish dinners from 11 to 3 p.m. today. Dinners are a $10 donation. Delivery is available for four or more orders by calling 446-5502. Visitors can eat in or carry out. And library programs, make spring chicks in a basket with the experts from Creative Bug at 4 p.m. on Friday in the Danville Public Library's first floor meeting room. At 3 p.m. Saturday, the library is joining with WILL-TV for Math is Everywhere. An episode of the children's math series Peg Plus Cat will be shown. Special guests Peg will visit the library, and class to meet the class of 1959 lunch bunch will meet it from 11 to 1 p.m. Monday or March 19th at Jocko's Pizza Inn. Participants can bring pet food and newspapers for local animal shelters. And the United Church of Tilton, 520 West 5th Street, will serve a spaghetti dinner from 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday. A free will donation will be accepted. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, March 12th, 2020. Hope y'all have a good day. Stay healthy. Yeah, just good luck. And hopefully we don't get all that snow they're saying we're going to have on Saturday because I'm tired. I'm ready for spring. I don't know about you, but anyway, have a good day, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.